Conference record has joined the conference.
All right, well, we're ready to begin our start of our series for the year. Our learning series tonight is on extended school year, and we're grateful that Kathy Harstead from Pathfinder Family Center has agreed to do several of our learning series for us. So, Kathy, welcome, and I'll let you just take over from here.
Great. Hi, everybody. As Janine said, I'm Kathy Harstead, and in addition to being the director of the Pathfinder Parent Center, I am a parent of two children with special needs, and I have certainly gone through the process of obtaining ESY for our daughter, so I've had some practical experience. Before I got this wonderful job, which I've done for about 2.5 years. I taught special education for 6 years, and I worked in adult services as a behavior intervention specialist and a program director for 15 years, and I worked with as a family support specialist at Minot State for another 11 years. So I've been, that all of which means I'm old. I took a look at the list of people who had registered for this, and I thought, wow, these folks probably know as much as I do about ESY. I've taken some time during the past year to kind of study up on it because we do get a lot of calls from parents on this, but I would really like this to be a conversation, as Janine says. So if you have a question, please blurt it out so that I don't feel like I'm just talking to myself, because it feels very strange that way. And I think that we can also hopefully call on the collective wisdom of the group. I don't pretend to know everything. I'm not a lawyer. And so as we go through this, I'm not going to be talking as if I were a lawyer. Just we had at the front of the slide presentation, in which I believe you all have a copy of the disclaimer, we are federally funded, which means that as a parent training and information center and education, we are viewed by the federal government as an extension of the federal programs in any given state, but the contents of training that we put together don't necessarily reflect the opinion of the Department of Education. So just to clarify. So let's begin. The first thing we want to know when we go looking for information on ESY is that, is ESY part of special ed law? We know that our children's special education is something they receive as a result of IDEA, the special education law. So the question is ESY part of that law? And no pressure, I'll give you the answer. Actually, it's not really defined in the law anywhere. It is defined in the regulations, which are issued by the Department of Education to tell schools how they must interpret that law. So often school districts are reluctant to take an opinion on something until the regulations for that particular version of the law have been issued. So ESY is defined only in the regulations. And I think most of you know this, but in case there's anyone on the line who doesn't, it stands for extended school year. And sometimes you will hear the phrase ESD, and I mention that only because that stands for extended school day. And some students not only need ESY, an extended school year, but they may need an extended school day or a modified school day. And so that's something to keep in mind as we go forward. But mostly tonight we'll focus on ESY. Occasionally I talk to a parent who has been told that their child can't have an extended school day. And in fact, that would not be the case, if it's needed to provide that student with a free and appropriate public education, then it's needed. So for this presentation, to build understanding as we talk, it's important to have some good definitions of ESY, to understand your rights as a parent, what it is and what it is not, and what rights you have and what rights your child has in relationship to ESY. And one of those main rights is who's eligible for it. What does it have to do with progress monitoring? And what are the timelines that we should be thinking about as parents in terms of if we're wondering about ESY for our child? So that's just the big overview, kind of what we want to cover in this training tonight. And I'm going right on to the next slide so we can begin thinking about this definition. ESY, or the extended school year, is an extended school year that's needed to provide special education and related services. And special education is defined in the law as specialized instruction. They must be provided to a child with a disability, which means that to be eligible, you have to have a disability under IDEA. And they're provided beyond the normal school year in accordance with the child's IEP at no cost to the parents of the child. And the second part of that definition is that they must meet the standards of the state education agency. And we'll talk about what that means for North Dakota in just a minute. And in general, when teams, IEP teams, are thinking about ESY, they are either thinking about it in terms of the individual needs of the student or the standards of the state, or both. One of the things that I hear parents say a lot, and I don't disagree with this, is that ESY can be kind of a slippery idea, because this definition seems cut and dried. Okay, I get all this. But when you start talking with people about ESY, you find that it's not always that simple, and you have to go back to really understand the basis that this rests in. Everything about ESY comes down to the main idea, which is, what is necessary for the student to have a free and appropriate public education? And that means that for some students, only the services that are provided during a typical school year may not be enough. And I think one of the key questions to ask as a parent and ask as a team, really, is questions that begin with the phrase, what will it take? What will it take for this student to receive special education and related services as part of a free and appropriate public education? Will a 2-week or a 3-month interruption in those services have some type of impact on the student that is going to be a lot different than the impact it would have on typical students? Okay. So a lot of times the next slide is what ESY is not. When we define something, it's almost sometimes easier to understand it in terms of what it's not. An extension of time in school. Now, that sounds kind of strange to say that, because we just said it's special education and related services that are provided beyond the normal school year. So what do we mean when we say it's not an extension of time in school? (Clears throat) what we mean by that is that it's just not continuing a typical school day for the student. So if you have a student who's in the second grade or the fifth grade, it's not just continuing that on. It is providing the specialized instruction that would have been available to that student. ESY is not summer school, and I think most parents get this, and sometimes they encounter a school district who will offer them whatever they have available for summer school when the issue of ESY comes up. So I think it's really important for parents to be confident and comfortable in saying to the team, I realize that we have a summer school program, and I'm interested in learning more about that, but I think what we need to do as a team is talk about my child's need for specialized instruction, and that may or may not be available in summer school. So ESY can be provided in summer school, but it is not summer school by itself, because a typical summer school program may be enriching, but it may not provide the specialized instruction and related services that the student needs. It is also true that students with disabilities can participate in summer school and do just fine. So a summer school program might meet a student's needs, and that is just fine. It's not ESY, then it's summer school. And it is certainly not whatever happens to be available, and that, of course, is where the rubber meets the road. Schools, I think it's really important as parents to understand what you're getting when you place your child in school. Not that we have lots of choices for that unless we're going to homeschool, but when you send your child to school, you don't send them there to be alone in a corner. Schools are made up of lots of kids, and they're organized into learning communities or learning groups. And even our children who have autism, who have trouble with interactional things, we want them, to the extent possible, to participate in group learning experiences. And so it's natural for schools to do that, to organize things into groups and to try to find general programs that meet the needs of lots of students. And they're going to be talking to us about that all the time. And I bring this up because sometimes parents get mad when schools do that. They hear that coming from school officials, and they think that's not individualized. But the fact is, that's what schools do, is they serve students in groups. And so rather than getting mad about that, I expect that to happen. But within that, then I want to work with the school to carve out a program of specialized instruction and related services that will meet the needs of my child. Try to reframe some of that a little bit. Kathy, going on to the next slide.
Kathy?
Just to recoup, ESY is specialized.
Kathy, I think somebody had a question.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
What would you say if the school is encouraging a program, they can build a program, but your child is going to be the only student in that program?
Mm-hmm.
Is that ESY?
Maybe. Maybe not. It depends on what the unique needs of your child are and why the team is looking at ESY in the first place. The courts have said that the school is not required to build an ESY program that looks exactly the same as what's offered during the year. They don't have to do that. So if your child is in the third grade or first grade and you have a classroom of 15 students and there's a lot of social interaction, and language models and a focus on academics, yada, yada. That doesn't mean that the ESY program has to look exactly like that. But with whatever is developed is must meet the unique needs of your child for specialized instruction. And if that instruction involves practicing language skills with peer partners, then there must be some attempt made to provide that. It doesn't have to look exactly like the typical school year. So it depends on how detailed your IEP is for that kind of thing, and that's where many of us as parents fall down, because we have a general IEP and we thought it was okay, and then all of a sudden we get to the point where we're looking at ESY and the pieces that we want to emphasize as being critical maybe weren't exactly specified in our child's IEP. And so we struggle then to make the case for ESY. ESY, because it's specialized instruction, needs to be provided by highly qualified instructors. And that's one of the biggest reasons why just placing a child in summer school may not cut it. Because we as parents have to remember to ask questions. Who's teaching the ESY program or the services? And do they meet the legal definitions as highly qualified instructors? Now, that's not to say you can't have a paraeducator working with a child who's being adequately supervised. But if we're going to have the general ed teacher who's volunteering to run the summer school program working with our child, providing her or him with special education services, will they meet the qualifications as a highly qualified instructor in that case? Finally, ESY has to be needed for a student to make educational progress. So lots of students would benefit from extra time with highly qualified instructors on academic skills. But they can get by. They can make educational progress without it. It would be nice for them, but they don't need it. So a lot of the focus of ESY comes down to really coming together as a team about what does this student need.
Kathy, I have a question.
Yes.
You're starting to get into, I think, into retention and recruitment as a criteria, or asking what criteria there are. Is there any other criteria besides retention and recruitment?
Yes, there is, and we're going to go over that tonight. Can I hold you off until we get to that section?
Sure.
Okay. All right.
Kathy?
Yes?
You mentioned here ESY is needed for a student to make educational progress, and I understand that ESY has to be looked at every single year. But when you talk about it makes educational progress, what if they qualified 1 year and then suddenly made wonderful progress over the summer while they were in the ESY program? How do you understand how to gauge that for the next year? Because now that they made the progress, are they going to disqualify them the next year? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean. I think to make the case in that case is, yes, it's not so much whether they did or didn't make progress during the regular year, because we would hope that with any effective special education program, students are making lots of progress every year. I think the question gets to be, what happens during the three-month interruption when those kinds of services then are not available? What will be the impact on the student's learning?
Right. If we have 1 year where he wasn't making any progress, and now that we did enroll him into a program and we showed that it did have progress, we still have to revisit this every year, even though just that evidence alone appears to make it a point that the child actually needs the service.
Right.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to, you know, be difficult to review it as a team. But I would recommend that we always take a look at that. If the IEP team says that ESY is necessary, then the school must ensure that ESY services are available. And that's pretty blatantly stated in the regulations. Now, sometimes we hear reasons why that's not going to happen. And I'm not telling you a school will never say that it won't happen, but I'm saying that the regs say that if the team has determined it's necessary, the school must ensure that they're available. So if a school is not doing that, that would mean they would be probably out of compliance with the regulations, and that would be grounds for a complaint on the part of the parent. This year in Minot and Bismarck and other places, we encountered some really exceptional circumstances due to the flooding, and that interrupted the ESY services, and there has been some sympathy for the school district when you have 4,000 people out of their homes to understand that this is an atypical situation. And, in fact, the Department of Ed is, you know, giving schools a little bit of room on that issue. At the same time, between the first evacuation in Minot and the second evacuation, there was an opportunity to get ESY reinstated. And in Bismarck, they did that. They moved it to a hospital. Minot, they were unable to do that. And the question of how proactive a school district or a special ed unit has to be in pursuing SY under atypical situations just isn't written down anywhere. So the only way that that's going to happen is, you know, through formal kinds of dispute resolution challenges. And I think we're on new ground here. So I'll just say that. I'm going to go on with this so we can get to the recruitment piece. Just some things that we want to review really quickly. Schools may not limit ESY services to particularly categories of disability. And I'm tired, so I'm struggling for words, but when a school can say outright, well, we're only going to serve the students from these programs or these classrooms in our ESY program and not any others. We don't provide ESY to students with learning disabilities. So those kinds of statements, that would be an overt statement that would be limiting the ESY services to a particular category of disabilities, and schools may not do that under the regs. However, if you prevail, let's say, and get ESY for your child and find that the program that is set up, your child is the only child who speaks. And so you've won ESY, but there are no language models in the program. It makes you wonder if, in a way, it's still not being limited to particular categories of disabilities. And so I think it is important for schools to look at different kinds of ESY program options for parents, and that is much easier to do in larger systems. A school may not unilaterally limit the type, amount, or length of the services. So the fact that my daughter, for example, does not need an ESY program over Christmas break does not mean that your son does not need that. And we can't just say outright, well, you know, we're going to limit it to this, this, or this. Okay. So we've heard a lot of yakking by Kathy. And I wanted to take a minute as a group and see if we can respond to these types of statements. So if an administrator says to you, we only provide ESY to students with severe disabilities, what would you say back?
I would say the needs of the child dictate the services, and this is about my child, not every child.
For you. Anybody else? How comfortable do you feel? And I mean, do you go back to what the law says, or do you kind of try to avoid that?
I tried to use the law, and I had found some information in a pamphlet that said we could file for due process if they had said no. And during the time we were filing the due process, they would have to provide the ESY services while we were fighting. And they said, no, it just says recommends that that would happen. It doesn't say that we have to, by law, follow that rule. So, and then they went into the due process steps. Very intimidating.
Mm-hmm. It is. Because we're not lawyers, and we can't really interpret the law. I do think it's okay to say, to refer to the regulations, though, and say, well, I'm not a lawyer, but it does say here that we can't limit it. So maybe we could take a look at this as a team and see what my child needs. I like it when you said my child, because it brings it back into. But it can be intimidating sometimes. How about if the school says, well, we're going to offer ESY this summer, but we have a speech therapist, so we're going to offer some communication and speech therapy training. What would you say if your child needed OT or reading instruction?
That it doesn't meet the goals of my child's individualized education plan.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It doesn't meet all the criteria of the areas that he needs help with.
Mm-hmm. There are a number of, going on to the next slide, there are a number of policy rulings that it's important to be aware of as a parent, and these are all outlined in letters that have been issued by the Department of Education that are available on their website. Some of the key policy rulings came very early, like back in the late 1980s. The decision about ESY cannot be made arbitrarily by the school district. It has to be a decision that's been discussed by the IEP team.
So if they're not telling the parents why they're disqualifying their child, is that against the law?
The law says that the school ultimately has the right to make the final decision because they're the one that has to provide the free and appropriate public education, but that if they do decide not to offer service, they do have to provide the parent with that information, the basis for that decision, in writing.
And if they don't, is that breaking the law?
It's not doing what the law says. I can't tell you they're breaking the law in the way that a judge or a lawyer could,
okay.
But I think you would have grounds for a complaint to the Department of Public Instruction.
Okay. And you should ask for that kind of information through a letter, right?
Yeah, and I would just say, help me understand the basis for your decision.
Right.
You know, please give me a letter. If you're going to turn me down, I don't want this to just be a conversation because this is very, very important for my child. And I understand you've made a decision, but I need to understand the basis for that, and I need to be able to explain it to others, so please give me that in writing.
Right. I've asked for fact data, like instead of basing it all on emotional. Because even parents can get emotional about wanting this for their child, but when you've got the facts in front of them and they refuse to look at those items, and then they don't they don't want to give the reason why they're not qualifying your child. It's frustrating.
It is, and it's very easy to do. The regs don't really give schools a lot of guidance in how to do ESY. There's very little in the regs about it. So most of what we know has been decided by court action through the courts. And a given teacher or building principal may not really have the time to follow all that. So their knowledge of ESY might be somewhat loose, let's say. And as a parent, my knowledge might be somewhat loose, too, if I hadn't had to study up on this. So let's go through the rest of this, and I think we'll come back to that topic a little bit. If we don't consider ESY for every student or any student, then the courts have said that schools aren't really addressing the unique needs of all students. And then the last part, I talked about that earlier. This is the letter that said the extended year may differ from the regular program. That doesn't mean that summer school is appropriate by itself, but it doesn't have to look like the regular year either. Sometimes for some students, not everything in their IEP is needed for them to benefit from special education. It may be just certain pieces of the IEP that are necessary. So the team actually has to go back to that IEP and look at what kinds of specialized instruction are really needed. Not just beneficial, but really needed for the student. And in today's IEPs, you can often find that an IEP will have accommodations and modifications written into it, but the specialized instruction, the special instructional techniques may not be described very well. And so as parents, it's important for us to focus on that when we develop our child's IEP.
I see that it says ESY may not be limited in length for all students. What if a school was saying we only offer 2 days of ESY for any student that qualifies for ESY? Is that, is that what that's for?
Yeah, that would be, so if a school is saying that, I would say things like, well, I appreciate that. Let's take a look at a team as to how often during the summer my child is going to need to receive the specialized instruction in order to benefit. And if it shows that they're going to need something daily, then what's going to happen if they get this one day and then they don't get it the next, and then they get it and then they don't get it? How is it likely to play out? And if they need it more than the 2 days you're offering it, then we have a gap between what my child needs and what you've typically offered. Let's put our heads together as a team and see what we can come up with.
Kathy?
If I'm teaching this in a group, I usually ask people to raise their hands and ask if anybody has ever had trouble thinking on their feet or coming up with things to say.
Yes.
It sounds easy when I sit here on the phone and I say these things, but I know from being in IEP meetings that it's not always. And some of my best thinking on my feet comes about 8 o'clock at night when I'm home after the meeting.
Kathy, I had a question to add to that last one about reducing related services during ESY.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of you seem to have a conversation about what my child needs. But that needs to be coming from a lot of times the teachers.
Mm-hmm.
But the teachers are limited also in what they can say because admin has already indicated this is what we have. You'll need to go if you think this, you'll need to come back to the district or to the special ed unit and get the okay before approving it. So the
right.
Teachers are kind of caught in the middle.
I would say that we need to go back to the fact that the decision about ESY needs to be made by the team. It's not made in a separate meeting in the office of the special ed director. It's made by the team. And the team is supposed to have someone there who can make decisions on behalf of the school. So if whoever's come as the administrator can't do that, then we don't you know, then we need to get someone there who can, and then the whole team is there. And I think that it's at times it can be that a teacher or a case manager feels somewhat limited in what they can or can't do or say because administratively a district has taken a certain position. And I do think it's okay for us as parents then to take a role in the meeting where we lead the discussion. If the team facilitator isn't going to lead the discussion to look at what my child needs, then I'll lead that discussion because I'm a team member too. And that's easy for me because I feel comfortable doing it. For those parents that don't feel so comfortable, and there are many of us who do not, then I would say that that would be a really good time to see if you could get a facilitated IEP and get a neutral person to facilitate that discussion. I have a really nice checklist that I've shared with Vicki Peterson and others that kind of go through all of the different decisions that have been made by the courts in making decisions as a team about whether a child needs ESY. And I find that if you bring that into the meeting and say, this is a really nice guide that we can use to take a look at this. I know that the regs don't say a lot about how do we decide this. And I would feel good if we could just go through this point by point and think about this in terms of my child. Because it gives you a nice visual tool to bring the point of discussion to what's required. And so you don't have to be dependent on someone else to do that. It's nice when the case manager or the teacher can do it. And we have some in our state who can, but sometimes that doesn't happen for whatever reason. Okay. So the IEP team determines the amount of services, and they're going to want to concentrate on those areas in which a student might experience regression or skills or programs that are needed so that regression does not occur in academic areas. So that might be something around behavior. A student doesn't have to have already experienced regression in order to qualify for ESY services. A lot of parents get caught up in proving that their child needs the ESY because they're not making progress, but you actually just have to show that they're likely not to make progress in order to qualify for ESY. It's okay to have an ESY program that is only for a related service. So suppose your child were getting music therapy, just to make something up, or horse therapy, hippotherapy, that's the word. And it's like a major relaxation technique for your child that gets very tense without it. And it's just critical to continue that through the summer. That might be the only component of an ESY program. In the communities that we live in, it's common for people to have a lot more time available in the summer, farming being the one exception to that. But people go camping. They bug out for a couple of weeks. They do a lot of outdoorsy kinds of things. And our children do sometimes benefit from that break. So in thinking about ESY, it's important to think about the kind of summer you're able to build for your child. And you want there to be a break from the regular routine to some extent so our children learn how to deal with those kinds of differences. But some children just need more structure. And
happy.
Our youngest was, she didn't need that so much when she was younger, but the older she got, the more she struggled with self-regulation and the more important that structure became. Yes.
Kathy, it's Vicki Peterson.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question for you, just because talking about time and stuff. If your child is qualified for ESY, you know, I don't know if every school is like that because, of course, you're having different teams determine if your child is eligible for ESY, but how do they come up or with the amount of time of ESY you get? I mean, I'm going to use my own case as an example, but, you know, for my son, you know, he would get an hour of ESY 2 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, talking with the team, you know, I said, well, okay, are you guys making that decision as a team? Like, we're all agreeing that's all he needs? And they kind of come back with, well, no, that's all the time we can give him.
Right. So what are you saying?
I'm saying I think that he needs more time.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like my team says, yeah, if we could give more time, we'd give it. But this is all they allow us to give each child. And that just doesn't seem right to me.
Right, and so that's when we need to have the conversation. And I would just say, look, I get that. Schools have limited resources, and they kind of set up programs and make decisions based on that. But we have a situation here. I love that phrase. We have a situation here where we have a unique child, and that's just not cutting it. And we know that as a team because of A, B, C, and D. So we're going to have to do this differently, and we may need to have someone here at the team meeting who can work with us on this.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can't get it yet to 5 days a week for, I'm just making this up, Vicki, 3 hours, then at least something that's more than the 2 days for an hour, because we know that's inadequate.
Because my understanding, right, is that the IEP really directs the ESY services as well?
Yes, it does. So I am on slide 16. Just thought I'd throw this in, that children who turn 3 during the summer must be provided with ESY if it's been deemed as something they need by the team. So we can't be saying to them, well, yeah, you're turning 3 this summer, but it'll be your first year, and we don't really know if you're going to need ESY, so we don't have to provide it this year. We do have to provide it if the team says that the student needs it. And so that really goes back to the whole transition planning process for early intervention. Okay. In the initial court cases and in the ESY regs, a formula for thinking about ESY was put out as an example. An example is not a rule, it's an example, but it's particularly logical, so schools and even state departments have taken this and run with it, and so a lot of the conversations about ESY come down to these two words, regression and recoupment. But these are not the only things that a team must look at. But let's understand them. Regression is the student is likely to lose more skills than the amount expected for any students. All students get a little loosey-goosey with some skills over the summer. They may not read as much. They may not remember that last unit on whatever that was introduced at the end of the year when they were tired and didn't want to be in school anymore, that kind of thing. Some review has to happen at the beginning of the year. But if we deem that the student would take longer to regain those skills than students without disabilities, should be of concern to the team. And if the student is likely to lose more than the amount expected. Now, that can get rather subjective. What is the amount expected for all students, and who is most likely to have that information? Are we most likely to have that information as a parent? No. that's where the grade level teacher is going to have that. So to take it out of a kind of a he said, she said, because that the opinion on what that is can vary from teacher to teacher to teacher. I think that, you know, ideally the team would go to some type of data-driven discussion.
That's
where you actually look at the reading curriculum for third grade and say, okay, when are the first new skills introduced? How many weeks do you review? Do you review for 1 week at the beginning of the year or 2 weeks? How long did it take my child to learn these skills in the first place? And if they lose them over the summer, is that going to be enough? Instead of, well, I think my child needs ESY. Well, we think your child doesn't need ES. You know, it can get into kind of a subjective instead of objective. So,
but in a previous slide, we were told we don't really have to prove that they are going to regress. It's the chance that they're going to regress. And now we're having to talk about fact-based data that's actually proving it.
No, the fact-based data is, and I'm sorry, you're right, you're calling me on that.
That's why it's so sticky.
It is. It gets, you get sucked into talking about regression and recruitment. The key word here, and I just did it, the key word here is that the student is likely to, not that they have, but they're likely to lose more skills.
And this is where...
So if you can show that your child in general is not likely to get back to where they were based on a one-week refresher, you know, it's not so much that you have to prove that they've regressed, but you want to have some data. Besides, I think that they're more likely. You want to pull or draw on events or things that have happened during the year, or the general evaluation about your child. So if your child has an intellectual disability, for example, you could use that. You can use the general amount of time that it takes them to learn new skills.
Having a list of what they know, like, for instance, mine's just a little guy, so what shapes he knew, what colors he knew, and then going into the next year, what shapes he knew, which colors he knew. That kind of data really supported ESY for me.
Yeah, exactly. Let's go on to slide 18. So the courts have ruled that the likelihood of regression is all that's needed, and the team should avoid focusing on a single inflexible criterion. So unless a student is three grade levels behind, they don't really need ESY. That would be a single inflexible criterion. Because decisions about ESY are based on information about the student's performance, their progress, and the best judgment of the team, parent input must be considered. And it's important not only to quantify what we observe about our children, but to make sure that that judgment isn't just discounted or ignored, that it becomes part of the record. And, you know, hopefully that will be entered into the IP minutes, but if not, you can produce your own documents, which, you know, share your point of view and get them into your child's record. These are the different team considerations that the courts have shown need to be considered in making a decision about ESY. The degree of the impairment of the student is a factor that has to be taken into consideration. The degree of the regression and the recovery or the recruitment. The ability of the parents to provide the educational structure at home. If you have a home situation where both parents are working throughout the summer, being able to provide the kind of a educational structure a student might need in a child care setting just may not work. Or the child care provider may not be skilled at teaching colors and shapes to a young person with particular types of disabilities. The child's rate of progress is important because if the child is not making very much progress during the year, the team's going to want to look at that. And that definitely will be a consideration in looking at ESY. And then their behavioral and their physical needs can all be a basis for providing ESY. It doesn't have to be solely academics. Other team considerations that the court has supported include the availability of alternate resources, the ability of the child to interact with non-disabled children, the areas of the child's curriculum which need continuous attention, the child's vocational needs, and whether the requested services are an integral part of the program for those with that particular child's condition versus something extraordinary. Any questions on that? Has anybody in the group made the case for ESY on anything other than academics?
Yeah, Kathy, we have for our son.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that, Eric, or would you be willing to?
Yeah. Last year, my son regressed quite a bit during the school year, so much so we had to admit him to the psychiatric hold even for a while. By the time we got out, we did CAF, a partial hospitalization, and then the school year was almost over. And that's one of the main reasons why they approved him for extended school year at that point, is mainly behaviors at that point. It was even hard to get an academic reading. So that was one of the main reasons why as well.
And was that a case that was difficult to make, or did everybody kind of come together and say, yeah, we're going to have to do something?
Once we got the right people in the room, that was... The difficulty is we had meetings to agree to have meetings, and eventually once we had the meeting, it was just a matter of about a five-minute conversation. It was yes. But it's hard to get everyone in that room that we needed to say yes.
Isn't that amazing?
Yep.
How that works. Some teams have used a critical learning period to justify ESY, particularly for very young children.
And that might be that he or she is just starting to learn how to write and form letters and things.
Mm-hmm. Or reading.
Yeah.
So that's important, though. If the team doesn't gather important information about a student's progress, it's going to be difficult to make a decision in favor of ESY. You can make the case based on the fact that the student is likely to regress. They don't have to fail in order to get it, but it's easier to make the case if you have some really good information about the student's progress.
I think it's super, super, super important to ask for the child's file before going into an ESY discussion with the team, because in some cases they may have left out the report cards in the child's file, and those report cards indicated the regression.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some parents have found some really nice data that's actually been provided by the school. Mm-hmm. And
this is Roxanne. It seems like in Bismarck, because of a lot of the RTI work or the response to intervention, that they're getting pretty good at kind of packaging that data so that you can actually see it. I haven't had that with Elizabeth, but that happened with Sandy, and they were trying to make actually a case for, to be quite honest, a change in a case manager, and looked at it, pulled his progress, and it was pretty nicely laid out.
But I think that this is an area where we have, as parents, struggle to get good information about our child's progress. We tend to get a lot of generalized, oh, they're doing so much better than last year, oh, they're doing really well, or, you know, he's coming along nicely.
Right.
And we have really no idea what that means. And then when you go to make a case for ESY, it's like a slippery slope. In fact, the courts have ruled against schools in situations where teams were not given enough time to measure a need for ESY. So you don't have to prove it, but when you want to have some data to show that it's likely, you got to start with something, and your child's progress is where you want to start. This is a recommended schedule for when, as a team, you should always take a look at, do we have any data in front of us that might speak to the need for extended school year in the future? You want to do that at the end of the school year, at the end of the summer program, at the beginning of the next school year, at the end of the following school year, before and after school vacations, throughout the school year, to have some probes. And before or after a student's been out of school for other reasons. So that'd be like the example that Eric gave. Most people I know are only having conversations for the first one at the end of the school year.
It was suggested to me that to start, the school needs to be ready to have an ESY discussion about February, instead of at the end of the school year, because then they will try to say, we don't have a program available.
Mm-hmm.
So they were saying,
right.
A P&A was saying February.
So if, but I think even in February, if you have data on where your child was at the beginning of the school year, you really have some evidence of progress to report. If you only start talking about it in February, you might only have a month to 2 months. And I also think that as a parent, as a member of the team, we should have access to the same information that's being shared with other parents just as often as they get it. And I know for my oldest daughter, she was never in special ed. She was only in regular ed. And every year I would go into her parent-teacher conferences, and they would pull out her report card, and it would have her grades on it. Then they would pull out their grade book. And it had every assignment, every class assignment, every homework assignment, every quiz, every test, every single piece of data that went into that final grade was there. It was all laid out, and I could see exactly where her progress was, what her strengths were, what concerns there were, if there were any, and we could make decisions together. I never asked to do that. They just produced it because that's what general ed did. But when I went for my child with special needs, I got things like, oh, she's doing fine, or we would tell stories about how cute she was. You know, that was really nice, but I talk to, you can complete all of the objectives for your child's IEP for the year and not make progress in your grade level on reading and have just gotten another year behind her. So it is really important to have that information.
Kathy?
Yes.
You just played one of my thoughts here is, of course, in the court cases with ESY that started in the 90s there, it was all about retention and recruitment. There's nothing in any of the laws saying that the kids can't make advancements during those time frames. If we have a person that's 2 or 3 years behind in reading, shouldn't they get ESY for that alone? Because if their IQ is high enough to actually learn the material and retain it, couldn't they use it to actually supplement it and advance it?
I don't think you'll find the case for that under ESY, but the case for providing what is a free or what is an appropriate education for a child that is not making progress in school but is not failing because they're bright enough to get it outside of school. I think that's the issue that you're talking about, Eric. And
right.
That's beyond ESY, but I think that I would have to look up some cases on that and see if that case has been made. I think that case could be made, but I'm not as familiar with whether anybody's done it. A lot of parents complained about it to the point where they did put in specifically in IDEA that a child does not have to be failing in order to be found eligible for special education services. But that a student would go year after year not making any progress, that's a problem.
I heard from a principal that had said that it's because of your child's disability that he's behind. And I said that's exactly the case why he needs ESY.
Right.
They're saying, but it's because of the disability that he's not getting it.
Right. Well, the IDEA says that all children should be held to high expectations. And lots of different children with the same disability do better or worse in school, depending on the quality of the instruction that they get, their motivational systems, health issues, and a lot of different variables. So to say that, you know, my daughter, for example, has an IQ of 53, but her reading fluency right now is at the sixth grade level. I've talked to other parents whose kids fall in that same category, and they wouldn't even give reading instruction in school because of the disability. If we're just going to sit back and say, well, your child has a disability, and so that's why they're behind, that may be a factor in their learning, but that's what specialized instruction is for. But like I said, it's easy to say this on the phone. It's harder to do in the moment.
The other thing that scared me is that we're supposed to bring in our team for the ESY discussions, but sometimes when you go into a parent-teacher's conference with just the parent, or with just the teacher, they make comments about ESY during that time. I was caught in a time where I had just went by myself, and not to make the same mistake again, there should always be a buddy, even at a parent-teacher's conference, because they make these decisions and they make these points about ESY that are so unfair.
Had that happen, but I guess I would say, you know, wow, you're making some points about ESY, but I really think we're going to need to get the team together then if we need to be making some decisions and talking. Here's some dates next week when I could do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, I already made this point about the minutes, so I'm going to move on. I want to talk a little bit about monitoring progress. We want to get as much as possible. It is a subjective process no matter what we say, so we have to recognize that some judgment is involved here. But if we can look at the results of tests, observations, and work samples, we're on less shaky ground than if we're talking about clinical skills, opinion, and intuition. The evidence-based procedures for monitoring progress recommend that teams use curriculum-based measurement. It's a reliable and valid assessment system, or it's based on a reliable and valid assessment system, and you can use it to take a look at basic academic skill areas. You can also use it to look at communication skills, at preschool skills, at vocational skills, and other kinds of of areas. So it doesn't have to be limited just to academics, but there are many more formal curriculum-based measurements out there for academics. And I'm using this to show you some examples of it tonight. The it gets abbreviated sometimes as CBM, but I'll try not to use new acronyms here. What CBM or curriculum-based measurement is that you take probes on outcomes for the student throughout the year, and those should be administered frequently, weekly or every 2 weeks, so that if the student isn't making progress, we're not waiting till February or the end of the year to notice that. It just breaks my heart when I talk to parents and they're telling me that they're pushing for ESY because their child didn't make any progress for last year. And I'm like, whoa, we have an issue here that's bigger than ESY. How could your child go for a whole year without making progress? Where is the specialized instruction and why isn't it being adjusted so that your child is making progress? Special education teachers are taught between 3 to 5 data points. If a student's scores are, or performance isn't going up, either 3 or if it's up 1, down 1, up 1, then over 5 periods, you should be adjusting your instruction in order to make sure that that child continues to learn. So if I'm in a meeting in April and I find out that my child's at the same place they were last year at this time, something has gone dreadfully wrong and it's really too late. It's not just about ESY anymore. It's about why isn't my child making progress? Either our goals are wrong or we need instruction that's different. So having these probes in place throughout the year and graphing the student's progress over time, this is sort of the ultimate in terms of what we should be stretching for in special education. And there was a time when if you talked about this, people would shrug this off because they viewed it as a lot of work and everybody can kind of teach the way they want to, kind of a thing. But in the world of response to intervention that schools are moving to, this is becoming more and more critical for schools to be doing. And good schools in North Dakota are doing it. In reading, we look at oral reading for the measurement. Of course, students learn to read silently, some of them. But a fluent reader can typically comprehend. That's not 100% true. Sarah's fluency is better than her comprehension, but in general, for most students, for the vast majority of students, that they're how fluently they read, in other words, how well they read orally, can tell you a lot about what they can comprehend. And so the students are assigned passages for reading that they would need to master by the end of the year. And then over time, we see the total number of words read correctly in 1 minute is used as a probe. So it doesn't take a long time to take the probe. It's 1 minute. You have the student read this passage or a series of passages, and then you count the number of words they read correctly. And that should be going up across the year. With math, you can use it with computations, but with also concepts and the applications. And you present a sample of problems to be mastered, and your score is determined by the number of correct digits in their final answer within the time frame. You want to take probes right away at the beginning of the year because that's going to be translated into their present level of performance. And that can be used to compare their performance to later in the year. If the test administration is consistent, use the same kind of scoring procedures and same difficulty levels. So I put a couple of examples of goals that you might have in reading and math just to give us some samples of what that looks like. And I love my little button up there in the top corner. My child has an IEP, and I'm not afraid to use it. So you, to put it all together, you identify the end of the year goals. You decide as a team what kind of, how are we going to measure my child's progress throughout the year? How will we know as a team that my child is making progress throughout the year so that we can make course corrections as we go? Let's use some kind of curriculum-based measure from the curriculum that you're teaching to kind of take some probes periodically and make sure that he or she is continuing to make progress. So you set a goal line. Okay, this is where he started. This is where we want him at the end of the year. This is the rate across the weeks of instruction of progress that we expect to see. So you take your annual goal minus the current performance, you divide by the number of weeks between the baseline and that goal, and you can even set short-term or weekly objectives. Not only should we be moving along here, but these are the objectives for each week. So here's an example in reading where it's pulled together. You see the present level of performance. He gets 65 words correct per minute. We want him to get to 115. And so that means he's got to get at least 1.4 additional words correct each week throughout the year. So you can see, okay, this is where he is, this is where he needs to go, and this is the progress he needs to make in order to get there. Same thing, I have a math example. I won't read it to you, but I think you can follow along. How many of our IEPs and our teams really do this? And it's this kind of measurement that really takes it out of the he said, she said, I think, you think kind of a decision, making progress. And there's no reason why you can't do the same kind of thing when it comes to numbers or shapes or letters or any of the other kinds of goals that we have for kids. So if the trend line is steeper than the goal line, we need to raise the goal. If the trend line's below, we need to modify the instruction. And if they're at goal line, they're making sufficient progress to meet the annual goal. So here would be an example where a student wouldn't be making progress. You want to change the instruction. And there are many ways of using these probes and doing these graphs so that the students can be involved in seeing their own progress, so that they're easy to fill out and share with parents on a regular basis. This doesn't need to be a six-cycle graphing procedure that takes 2 hours for the teacher to do. They have enough paperwork. Thank you very much. But it would need to be incorporated. And many of our better schools are using Dibbles or AIMSWeb or other methods where they have this data. They just may not have shown it to you as a parent. So we're monitoring really two things, the student progress and the effectiveness of the instructional program. So all those things we put into the IEP that we want the child to have, are they making a difference? Assuming that they're being implemented, which is a whole other discussion. The research shows that students whose teachers monitor academic progress and make adjustments in the instructions throughout the year, in other words, they don't just present the curriculum, but they're monitoring whether the students are getting the curriculum and they're making adjustments, those students are going to outperform students whose teachers are not using curriculum-based monitoring. So if we're going to put something into the ESY that our students need, let's tie it back to how will we know that there's a need for that? How does it relate to how my child makes progress, either directly or indirectly? And then what are our goals for performance and how do we want to measure that as a team? For a lot of parents, this becomes kind of, it feels overwhelming because, you know, I'm just showing you these simplified examples, but life in the IEP gets a lot more complicated than that. And it's, we're going to be doing a training later in the year on how to write, how do you decide what goals to even have for a kid and what objectives do you have. And so we'll come back to that. But at least I just wanted to touch upon it today to give you some thoughts on trying to work into your child's IEP some way of monitoring progress throughout the year as a beginning point to think about. I think I said this earlier, that the school has the final responsibility, so they have to put their reasons in writing. And if you disagree, then you can access any of North Dakota's dispute resolution processes at that point. And we're listed in DPI. Pathfinders is a dispute resolution ally. So calling us, we can help you with working through that with schools. And it can be everything from sometimes we send for the records and review them with you, and then we can outline a course to follow to kind of get your case made. We can help you with letter writing. We'll help you weigh the pros and cons of different dispute resolution options, and maybe think about approaching things a different way than you might have before. If nothing else, you'll be able to vent to us. Our conversations are completely confidential, and we don't talk about that with other people in any way. So we're here for you in that regard. Our goal when you call is to get you as confident and as comfortable and possible as speaking up for your child. So for many of us who don't think well on our feet, it helps to rehearse and get feedback. You know, oh, that was great what you said there, or, I might avoid saying it that way because that's going to be a red flag. Let's try something more like this. You know, we can kind of coach through that process, and parents tell us anyway that it's helpful. I would just become familiar with this phrase that limited funding has not been acceptable as a valid reason for denying ESY by the courts. Generally, if the team concludes that a school's student is eligible for ESY, then the schools are expected to find the funding.
And that also includes mileage.
Yeah. Free and appropriate. There we go.
So many of us live out of town, and if they're going to provide an ESY program that's not in our town, they have to pay for the mileage too. So,
although if you don't bring that up, you'll be doing right. The transporting.
Mm-hmm.
Schools are not required to provide an extraordinary level of services when providing ESY. I listed some resources at the end, and I want to draw your attention to the third one on the page. I put these resources on here because they're the first three are all really vetted resources. But if you look at the resource on the North Dakota Department of Public Instruction, you'll find that it's not like one of their typical guides. It's a brochure. And I think that there is a need in North Dakota to have a more extensive guide on ESY. Whether I'm going to be able to persuade the department to upgrade that one, Allison told us at the last IDEA meeting that they were reviewing all of them to see which ones needed to be upgraded. So I think a letter to the department asking them to please consider upgrading the ESY regs for our state would be in order. If anybody wants to join me with that, that would be great.
Kathy?
Yes.
I also on the, I think it's titled IEP Guide PDF, there's an Appendix F on there. It's known as the Big Blue Book, the thick one, and there's an Appendix F that goes in a little bit more detail than that pamphlet as well.
I might have missed that. I probably knew it was there at one time, but there's so much that I lost track of that. Thank you, Eric. I'll look at that before I write my letter. I know that they are planning to upgrade. They can't completely redo, but they've been given permission to upgrade the Department of Open Construction website, and I think that will be really helpful to their staff and to all of those of us who use that website to try to find information. DSY planning checklist, we put that online so you can go and look at that. I don't know how many of you are at computers right now. You might be folding socks in your laundry room for all I know, but I pulled mine up, but it's rotated the wrong way, so I'll have to forego going through it. But you guys can take a look at that, and I would encourage you to bring it into the IEP meeting. Any other questions? Did you get your questions answered? If there are other questions that people have that they want to bring up, I'd be happy to try to.
I guess the only other concern we kind of mentioned a little bit about is that it's supposed to be a free education. ESY includes the free education, but the board has to approve the checks to the parents to pay for these services. So I thought that's funny that they don't come to the meeting. We have our IEP meeting, and they decide, yes, he does or does not qualify. But if he does qualify, we pay for the services. The school pays us back, but it could take months for them to give us a check because the board hasn't approved the money.
Mm. So you're paying up front, and then
right.
You're being reimbursed?
Right. And, I mean, having to be approved, and they're like, well, it hasn't been approved yet. I just find that strange that the school couldn't do that to us, too.
I think that you can make a case for then the education isn't free. Have you ever complained about that?
We've called, asking, for the reimbursement, but, I mean, it is.
No,
free,
but I mean, have you ever talked with DPI about that?
No, I have not.
Hmm.
I just find it strange that it has to go through another step of approval.
Yeah, I guess I would question that. So what I could do is I could have a chat with DPI without mentioning anybody's name, mm-hmm. and then report back through Vicki or Deneen what I found out.
That'd be great.
Any other questions at all?
I guess, if they did improve because they had the ESY, what do you talk about in your next meeting again? How do you decide 1 year he didn't, he didn't improve, he actually regressed for three quarters of the year. It took him that long to relearn those skills. And now that he had ESY, all of a sudden he's done so much better to fight it again every year.
Right.
What are the points that I
guess I would say that is your evidence right there, the fact that with 3 months of ESY, he was able to start off and continue at a much better place so that he could make progress. So since we know that, having no ESY for 3 months, we already have the evidence that he's likely to regress without it. I mean, I think you've got your evidence right there.
Okay.
You just have to flip it around.
Right.
Anyone else have any questions at all?
One of the things that was hardest for me as a parent was that I was really challenged in parenting a child with special needs. My child had a lot of behavioral problems, and sometimes our life as a family was exhausting. She had a lot of sensory issues as well. And, I didn't really want to have to speak up for my child all the time. I wanted to just be able to mention what we needed and have somebody agree with me for once. You know, I wanted somebody who is proactive in looking ahead, looking at the intent of the IEP and really figuring out who my daughter was and what she needed without me having to do all that stuff all the time, as I called it. But over time, I've just learned that there really isn't anyone else but you. And so I would encourage all of you to give yourself a pat on the back for all the times that you do speak up for your child. And it's not so much about having all the perfect words, because I don't have all the perfect words either, but it's the fact that you're there in your child's corner, you're seeing what you see. And when mentioning doesn't work, and it frequently doesn't, just take on one careful step at a time so you don't get too overwhelmed by this process, because it can be disheartening sometimes when you have a lot of other stuff you're juggling. And my hope for all of you is that you continue to be the best advocate that you can for your child, because no one else loves your child the way you do. And no one else cares for your child in the way that you do. And I'm honored to be part of the community of parents who have children with special needs. We're an awesome bunch.
Thanks, Kathy. I was discouraged this week because I had mentioned a few things about my child in a recent IEP meeting. And before you knew it, they threw it into all the statements into the IEP meeting notes, which we've never had before. Someone finally drafted them up just because they have PNA involved. Mm-hmm. And the statements that I was reading off of report cards from the teachers all of a sudden were my problem. Mother says that child mm-hmm. behaves this way. And
but when anybody else says something, they don't say... Psychologist says.
Right, and it's always mother thinks, you know, and it's just so discouraging because I was actually reading their comments that were hurtful and trying to make a point that it was a problem, and all of a sudden it's mother says. And I look at the report card, or these meeting notes, and I wonder who eventually will be reading these files and what job or college, you know, military, whatever, wants to look at their school files and finds these comments in there. It's hurtful.
Mm-hmm. This is Carl. We had that problem with our school, and they would include my comments in any incident reports, IEP meetings, or any other discussions related to him where they had notes that were posted in the file. And it is frustrating.
I did ask them to remove those comments. I don't know if they will or not. But
well, I asked the school to remove our comments, and they told me that I could write a rebuttal.
Wow.
Yeah, the school does get to do the minutes. I just think a lot of educators haven't really thought about what you're pointing out before. It could be that somebody is trying to... you know, if somebody thinks less of what you're saying as a parent, but it could be that they just saw it done that way once in a report, and then they thought that's how you're supposed to do it, too. So I'm glad you spoke up.
Yeah. You just want to be on the same team. You do want to be a team. It is a goal to all be on the right, you know, on the same team, fighting for the same child.
Did anyone else have any closing comments or questions? Kathy, this was really great. It was a great refresher for me, and I learned something new tonight, so I really appreciate it a lot.
Oh, that's good. Is there any follow-up stuff that people would like to have or like to see us do in the future with
like
the SY or anything else?
Go ahead. Somebody else is talking. No? Okay. I'd like to see something about least restrictive environment.
Okay.
How exactly is that defined, kind of thing?
We'll see what we can do. I love to talk about that. And that, how comfortable are you all feeling about response to intervention? It's going to be really impacting our kids more and more.
Yes, it would. That would be good, too.
I know. From what I've heard of it, it really does sound like it's delaying child finding it, because the services just can't be run quick enough to through all three tiers within 60 days. And it even sounds like they're trying to speculate onto when they really suspect it. By the time they get to the third tier, they have already expected it. And then now they're just saying it'll take only 1 or 2 days to do the quote evaluation. They've been evaluating them possibly for a year even.
Well, the Department of Ed recently issued, and you probably have saw that, Eric, a letter indicating that response to intervention cannot be used to deny or delay an evaluation. So if, as a parent, you ask for that evaluation in writing, they have to do it. But I think that's going to be an important tool for us as parents to know when we should ask for that. Well, you're an awesome bunch. Deneen, thank you so much for the opportunity to do this. I really, really appreciate it.
You bet. And we can also host the least restrictive environment as well. So.
Okay.
So we'll talk. All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for joining us this evening, and have a pleasant rest of the evening. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, everybody. I wish I could see you. Bye. Bye, Deneen. Thanks.
Bye. Thank you.
Thanks, Deneen.
The leader has disconnected. The conference will now end.